Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 526. Science Faction, your weekly corona update. The numbers are as follows for today, December 20th, 2020. Worldwide infected, 76.5 million. U.S. infected, 18 million. Worldwide dead, 1.7 million. U.S. dead, 32,500. Once again, the U.S. is facing a crazy uphill battle right now. And I say uphill in more than one way because our numbers keep shooting up higher and higher. Many other countries have kind of gotten this under control, or if they're going up, are going up in a somewhat more measured way, whereas the U.S. seems to be just running out of control at this point. We currently have 28,000 serious cases in the United States and 7.2 million active infections, which is like triple the next closest country. It's crazy. Our active infections, what's going on right now is nuts. Sometimes the numbers don't show that overall because other countries had worse spikes earlier on, but they've now gotten under control. We're going crazy. The other week when I said, oh my God, you guys, we just hit 3,000 deaths. Isn't this crazy? It's more than 9/11 in one day. We're now at 3,600 deaths a day on our high numbers, and that shows no sign of going down. Since a lot of what we're seeing is residual from the Thanksgiving holiday and people going back to their regular lives and then intermingling and passing it along, we expect this to continue to go up after the Christmas and New Year's holidays that are coming up this week. So, it is crazy times. We are currently looking at 230,000 infections per day, which again is blowing things out of the water. Remember when I was saying, oh my God, we might get to 200,000 infections a day? That's crazy. Yeah, that was, if we could get to just to 200,000 infections a day right now, we would be doing way better. It is nuts. We are also at 113,000 hospitalizations. And the really big thing is a lot of our U.S. hospital infrastructure is seriously impacted, some of which is essentially collapsing. Nearby places to San Diego, a place a little bit northeast of us, Temecula, essentially got to 0% available ICUs. And in certain areas, they have now been granted the permission to essentially turn ambulances away. Hospitals are just turning them away. They're like, sorry, I don't know what to tell you. There are no beds here. You can't come in. So I don't know if that just means the ambulance circles around with that person who's sick in it until they get better. Like, I don't know what it is. This feels like Mad Max times. It's really, really nuts right now. For those of you guys who are listening to us outside of the country, like superfan Dwayne from New Zealand, you are probably looking at your 0% infection rate and just going like, what the fuck is going on over there, you nutty Yanks? And let me just say, those of us in the U.S. are thinking the exact same thing. All right, really quickly, before we get into the main articles, the Moderna vaccine, which we've been talking about for quite some time, did get the FDA emergency approval. We talked about this on the last coronavirus update, that it was set for the 17th to go through the FDA emergency approval process. They had a few more questions about it. It did pass that. That vaccine has now been approved and supposedly shipped, and we are going to be getting that soon, which is fantastic. The Pfizer vaccine has actually already just started to be given out to certain people. We are now in the vaccination phase of this pandemic, and hopefully that means that the pandemic itself only has a little bit longer to go. All right, let's get on to the science articles from this week. Article number one, COVID brain. So there's new evidence that the spike protein on SARS-CoV-2 can cross the blood-brain barrier. We've talked about this before. We talked about the possibility that this was infecting people's actual brains. That might be what's causing some of the loss of smell and taste. It might also be an actual cause of death in certain people if it's infecting the brainstem area. We've seen that with other similar viral infections. And we talked about how that could be a possibility, but we had no concrete evidence of that. A new mouse model study has confirmed that yes, indeed, this particular spike protein can cross the blood-brain barrier, at least in mouse models. And it might well be a good explanation for the brain fog certain COVID patients report. That's really bad news because that's oftentimes, at least when we see this with HIV and other viruses that can do this, it's associated with the cytokine storm in the brain where the brain recognizes there's an infectious agent. It sends way too much of a response from your immune system and that response itself ends up being damaging. In some cases, a cytokine storm can actually end up killing you, but it can also end up doing things like damaging tissue around it. And that's really bad when we're talking about your brain. So things like the COVID fog we are hearing people report may well be the symptoms of obviously brain impairment, but it could actually be brain damage. very scary stuff. And one more reason to kind of like really, really keep yourself safe. You know, there are all these young people out there who, and I talk to them all the time, who say, hey, you know what? We're young. If we get it, it's no big deal. I have to tell you, just because you happen to get over it or you have mild symptoms does not mean it's no big deal. We know that in a high percentage of essentially all people, including those with mild or asymptomatic infections, including those who are in prime shape like NCAA athletes, there is severe organ damage that may well be permanent that we find in those people, even ones, again, that were asymptomatic. We are finding organ damage that they're not even aware of. Now it turns out that there might be brain damage. So it's just something to think about. Like, again, the vaccines are already starting to be distributed. If you can keep yourself safe a little bit longer, please do whatever you possibly can to do so. All right, article number two, should we make a vaccine for pets and wild animals? This is a really interesting question. Now that we are getting to the point where we have a vaccine for people that is about to be distributed, we should start thinking about things like pets and animals. We talked before about how dogs and cats can catch SARS-CoV-2 and other animals like minks and ferrets. Obviously, bats could get it as well. There's an interesting idea that was brought up in this week's Journal of Science, which is, what do we do about that? Like, do we want to vaccinate them? Because again, if this starts bouncing around in dog populations, if somebody gives it to their dog, and then it starts going around in the local dog park, even if you then get vaccinated, what if this thing mutates enough? I mean, certainly if it gets into bats, it almost certainly will. We've talked about why that is before, because of bats' crazy population numbers. You know, millions of bats can be in a single cave. They have a really interesting immune system that is essentially a boot camp for viruses to make them incredibly infectious and virulent and dangerous. So there's a reason we talked about this as well, that bat researchers have actually quarantined themselves from their research subjects. They've stayed away from bats because they're so terrified of just putting this back into a North American bat population, because whatever we get out is going to be crazy. You do not want to put something like this into a wild native bat population, because whatever comes out could very well be even more deadly. And, you know, whatever immunity we have to this from either previous infection or from a vaccine may not at all fight it off once it comes out of the bats again. So it's an interesting thought. Do we at some point start vaccinating our pets? Do we start vaccinating animals we come in contact with, wild animals, farm animals, etc., to keep this disease from spreading through them? There's a lot of worry among certain researchers about great apes and how this disease may end up being more deadly to them and take out an already endangered group, you know? So very, very interesting stuff when it comes to that, because we think so much about ourselves. We think so much, which is valid, you know? But at some point we have to go like, whoa, what are the long-term effects of this? Even if we stopped every person who had it right now, if it's bouncing around in a bunch of French bulldogs somewhere, is it going to be a problem later on? All right, article number three, what does our response to this COVID pandemic mean for future pandemics? So first and foremost, there's something we should acknowledge here. We have had an amazing response to this disease in terms of vaccine production. Even our best efforts, vaccine production usually takes about 4 years or more and comes up with a vaccine that's maybe, you know, 70% effective. The fact that we've created, tested, and approved one in about 11 months that's 95% effective is crazy. It's a testament to modern science. Go thank a fucking scientist. This is amazing. For all the bullshit that's surrounding this disease and what has happened around it and stuff, this part is a Cinderella story. Also, the fact that at least two of the vaccine candidates, the Pfizer and the Moderna ones, are totally new types of vaccines we've never used before, mRNA vaccines, which, you know, with the boost of this, might actually completely replace existing vaccine technology because it seems to be safer, it seems to be much more effective, we can do it much more quickly. There are so many reasons mRNA vaccines are just better overall than protein vaccines, than dead virus vaccines, any of the stuff we've done. mRNA vaccines seem to be really where we want to go with this. And if we can be adaptive, you know, this may end up being something where this is the end of the flu. Because right now, the problem with the flu is every year a new flu kind of comes out of Southeast Asia, basically. And it's a variant of an existing flu, but it has changed enough that your old immunity and your old flu vaccines just aren't effective against it. But that's only because we have to start making the flu vaccines so far in advance, we have to guess which one is going to be coming out, et cetera, et cetera. With mRNA vaccines, we can do all of that much, much faster. And it is possible, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but it is possible that we could actually like really tamp down on flu infections by getting ahead of it much more quickly, and also maybe providing a more robust immune response that would work work multiple years in a row. Really, really interesting idea that kind of like out of World War II came all of this stuff, whether it was aviation or plastics or, you know, biomedical research, et cetera, that ended up making life better. Maybe out of this pandemic, we get rid of things like the flu. And it's also taught us a little bit about disease prevention in general. I guarantee you China is going to have some kind of stricter standards when it comes to their wet markets and stuff like that. So maybe we will prevent the next pandemic from coming through because of what we've learned here. It also has let us know what we are vulnerable to in terms of the next great pandemic. You know, I had always known as a science geek about the 1918 flu pandemic, but it still seemed far away to me. What this showed us was the vulnerabilities we had to these type of things and the infrastructure that we need to set up so that we aren't that vulnerable, because the next one might be 50% mortality rate or something like that. So it shows us that we need to be careful of fake rushes on things like toilet paper and things like conspiracy theories and people with their oppositional defiant disorder that don't want to wear masks. It shows us what we have to kind of worry about that maybe we didn't even know before. The fact that this entire thing could become an almost political issue and fall along the lines of political divisiveness is crazy to me, but it's something we know now, and it's something that we can, you know, at least possibly plan for the next time. Just the idea that we'd have so many people who are non-compliant to basic standards of health and safety and so susceptible to nutbaggy conspiracy theories, that's really important. Obviously, I knew people that were susceptible to dumb conspiracy theories before. I did a whole flat earth debate in 2017. However, I didn't realize it'd be like 40% of the population would be that susceptible to these nutty ideas. Knowing that will change, you know, how we deal with future pandemics and future issues. And that leads us to our last article, article number 4, and this is in Science News. What will the world look like post-pandemic? This time they talked to a bunch of different researchers from different fields to see what they thought the world would look like. So first and foremost, I don't think we'll ever be able to go back to the normal work school routine. While that may be part of our lives, this has taught us a whole lot about the ability to work and do school remotely and how to otherwise occupy ourselves in times that we can't go out to work in school, right? But just the idea that, you know, hey, if you are unable to physically be in a building, doesn't mean you can't work that day. It doesn't mean you can't go to school that day. Maybe some people can only afford to do school from home or college from home. A lot of this might really shake up the need to physically be in a specific place to do specific tasks that we have always assumed you have to be in a specific place to do. Other researchers are pointing out that if the 1920s are any indication after the great flu pandemic that came through, basically as they left the flu pandemic, maybe the same thing will happen here as we leave COVID, which is while the economy itself will take time to rebound, the world may enter like a social revival, the roaring 20s, if you will. Same kind of thing happened after World War II when people came home and, you know, the social life aspect of the 50s that went crazy. So things like live entertainment and social gatherings, et cetera, will probably go crazy. You know, the bars will be packed, the concerts will be packed, people will be at parties they wouldn't otherwise go to because they spend so much time not being able to go to any party. And there's all these people who face death or they've just been taken away from life. They didn't necessarily get sick themselves, but they didn't get to go participate in life. And now all of a sudden they realize how precious life is and how little time they have and how much they should value it. And they'll go look to experience that life. Maybe I would predict a rise in things like skydiving, like people want to go do that, or just like signing up for ballroom dancing, or unfortunately for us comedians, that unfunny guy from The Office finally trying out his dream to do stand-up comedy at open mics that they always wanted to do but never had the balls to, and now they finally go out. Don't do it, by the way. If you're out there and you're thinking, I always want to do stand-up, don't. You're not funny. It's not worth it. But yeah, I think there will be a revival of that. I think we'll see people flooding out into the streets as this thing slowly goes away, and that doesn't mean it's going to happen one day, but I do think that, you know, over the probably near the end of 2021 and well into 2022, things will be popping. As some researchers pointed out, we might still have lingering issues with the divisions that happened during COVID, the political divisions, the social divisions, the economic divisions, and the broad acceptance of those nutty conspiracy theories we talked about. Again, truth and reality was something that took a big hit during this COVID thing, almost as much as old people did. And so I don't know how we get that back. I don't know what we do about that. But as of right now, those divisions exist and they might get worse. Who knows? But maybe we'll also realize how lucky we are to be alive and have a normal life back, and maybe we'll appreciate it a bit more. Maybe we can have our own roaring 20s. Most of all, I look forward to the day where I can go back to doing live shows and where we won't need a weekly corona update, because in a post-pandemic world, it'll lose its importance and I can go back to having my Sunday nights to myself. All right, guys, I hope you like this coronavirus update, and I hope I don't have to do too many more of them, because hopefully this pandemic will end pretty soon as we all get vaccinated and work our way towards herd immunity. Until then, I'll see you back here later this week for Science Faction 527.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.